T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
On the WadeFord.com hotline, our guy David Griffin, who has joined the program before, comes on now, basketball executive, former GM of the Cavs, currently with NBA TV and Sirius XM NBA. David, how are you doing this morning?
Very well, fellas. How are you?
Griff, man, what's up, man? In finals film room is our task right now. We did it last Thursday, Sunday night. We'll do it tomorrow night for Game 3. Griff, I'm having a blast with you and Fratello and Derek Fisher on that show, and we'll have Brendan Haywood with us tomorrow. But I want to ask you about, did one loss turn into two for Cleveland with how they lost Game 1 and the mental mistake and the missed free throw, or do we give all the credit to Golden State for that Game 2 victory?
Well, I think one loss, the way they lost, may have contributed to it a little bit, but I think it has far more to do with the fact that a very efficient Kevin Durant emerged in that game. Steph Curry started to shimmy much earlier in the game, which is never a good sign. I really think what happened in Game 1 that was far more significant than the end that everybody focused on was J.R. Smith letting Steph Curry get free when he gambled for a steal right at the end of the half, and Steph banged a 38-footer. That was the first shoulder shimmy of the series, and it's been sort of downhill since then.
Griff, I know the rule changed in the NBA with the block charge and the reviewability of that, but with 30 seconds left, a bang-bang play that an official normally makes, do you like seeing that play reviewed at the end where LeBron gets overturned and is now called a block instead of a charge?
Yeah, I don't mind it being reviewed at the end if it's part of a theme of what we do with the review, but it's not what we do. So I think if there's going to be that kind of latitude given to that particular play, then there needs to be the same latitude at the end of games or in critical moments. Maybe there's a challenge flag that would bring this about, but we've seen examples this year of plays where if they had the ability to review it, the officials would have changed the call, but they didn't have the opportunity. So you see this a lot with calls that are about possession, and they're going to look at the tape to see who tipped the ball out. Well, if possession's going to change because somebody got mauled with a foul and you can't call the foul, then what happens is a two-minute report comes out and it says that you missed a call. Well, you didn't miss it. You just weren't allowed to fix it. So if we're going to have the latitude to fix block charge, it makes no sense that our theme would not be get it right all the time.
This guy's brilliant, man. David Griffin. We're not going to have him at NBA TV for very long. I keep telling him that. He's going to be back to being a shot caller in the NBA very soon. 2010 to 2017, he was an exec with the Cleveland Cavaliers there when they won the chip in 2016. The former employer, so to speak, of Tyronn Lue and LeBron James. And Griff, I want to know about their relationship. You know, 4 minutes to go in Game 2. Lue pulls the plug on LeBron and some of the other starters. LeBron didn't look happy about it. I'm not trying to stir up drama here. I just want to know, overall, how is the relationship between Coach Lue and LeBron?
I would guess it's probably the best LeBron's had with any coach. You know, LeBron's really cursed with being a savant. We talked about it last night. He understands the game at such a deep level. I don't think he's ever going to feel like any coach sees something he doesn't see or can tell him something he doesn't already know, certainly within the heat of the moment. So what makes LeBron so unique among superstars, I think, is he actually really wants a coach who will tell him what he needs to hear, get in his face and challenge him, and Ty Lue does that. So what you see on the court quite often is LeBron showing exasperation over something and Ty pretty much ignoring it. What you don't see is when Ty goes in at halftime and lights LeBron up and tells him he needs more from him. And so that's a relationship that's worked for both of them because Ty is completely unafraid and because LeBron wants to hear what he needs to hear.
Why is it portrayed then in the media that he doesn't like Ty Lue? Is that something that they want to come across? Is that something that's just completely concocted?
I think, you know, it's funny. I think because everybody looks at the snippets of those things that they see and they build their own narrative. And in the absence of any counterargument, it sort of gained steam, and that's what it is. Everybody wanted to say LeBron's the GM. It's completely untrue. Everybody wants to say he's the coach. That's completely untrue. Everybody wanted to say that he didn't like certain teammates. Completely untrue. So it's funny because people build it based on what they see, and LeBron is probably the most outwardly demonstrative face we have in the league. So you can read a lot into his frustration.
David Griffin joining us on the WadeFort.com hotline with NBA TV, Sirius XM, NBA Radio, former NBA exec for a long time, going back to the Suns and all that as well. And again, this guy is going to be coveted when and if a job or two opens up in the NBA. Griff, in terms of adjustments for Game 3, I think we're all anticipating Tyronn Lue to push some different buttons. You're down 0-2. You're returning home. Flip the script a little bit. If he does that, is it more Hood? Is it more Clarkson? Like, what different buttons do you think Tyronn Lue could push in Game 3?
Well, I think there's going to be either a Jetty Osman or a Rodney Hood adjustment. They're going to have to put another defensive presence out there. I think Rodney physically is exactly the right piece, and athletically he's the right piece. When they acquired him, he was a guy they acquired that was averaging 17 points a game and was considered an above-average perimeter defender. And he's just sort of unraveled since he got to Cleveland. And I think it's very difficult for a player like Rodney, who's a much, he's a much more passive guy, to accept playing with someone like LeBron, who's very aggressive and he's in your face all the time in terms of, listen, you've got to do X, Y, Z. Bron's not doing that because he's a bad teammate. Bron's doing it because he sees in Rodney everything that team needs to be fantastic. And Rodney needs to step up to that challenge, and it's difficult until you finally do it. Kevin Love struggled with that very early on, and it was a real grind for him to figure it out. And as soon as he figured out what was behind LeBron's actions and what LeBron was really trying to get to, they became thick as thieves, and Kevin became a radically better version of himself.
Is Jordan Clarkson a guy that suffers from the same things? But he's been pretty awful so far in the NBA Finals.
You know, I think Jordan suffers from the fact that he has to be an extremely high-usage, ball-dominant, somewhat inefficient scorer. You have to cut him loose and let him do his thing. It's hard to become Jamal Crawford if you don't get to take 20 bad shots. And Jamal Crawford makes a lot of bad shots. Jordan Clarkson can do that, but that level of ball dominance doesn't really exist in Cleveland, particularly in the playoffs where LeBron's going to play so many minutes, and now in the finals, if he's playing 46 minutes, when is Jordan going to get to be ball dominant enough to really find his rhythm? So it's hard to be that player when you're playing alongside LeBron in the finals.
It's the Midday Show with Rick and John here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, home of the Hawks. And Griff, I want to talk draft and the Mo Bamba, Luka Doncic of it all here in just a little bit. But who is your finals MVP right now, Curry or LeBron?
I think right this minute I would say LeBron. And the reason is there's nobody that's carrying their group any more than he is. And while they haven't won games, this series is only moderately competitive, even in the absence of Iguodala, and it's because of LeBron. That absence of Iguodala has really made it so that Golden State doesn't have a matchup for the best player of his generation, and he's doing what he needs to do. He's making that clear.
Griff, there's been a lot of rumors about what LeBron will do in the offseason. Will he stay? Where he go? Will he go? Do you think he returns to Cleveland as they're currently constructed?
You know, I wish I had a better feel for what boxes he's going to try to check. I really don't know what it is that's going to be the primary consideration. We were just stone lucky at the time that he came back when he did, that the greatest player of his generation was from Akron, Ohio, and that he wanted to raise his family there. And we really benefited from that to a huge degree. And I think we did because we presented a story for him of how we were going to enable him to compete for championships, which was essential to his legacy. And I think there are several teams that are going to try to sort of spin the same tale. And if it's a place his family wants to live, then they've got a shot. And I think there's several markets that have a chance. And probably the one with the best chance is Cleveland if LeBron decides to go that route.
Former Cavs executive David Griffin, now with NBA TV and NBA on Sirius, joins the Midday Show with Rick and John here. Griff, I'm just curious about this, and you know, I think it's going to be a very interesting answer. How would you categorize your relationship with LeBron James in your time as the shot caller there in Cleveland?
I think we just had mutual respect. I think he knew that I wanted to win as badly as he did, and I think he understood that a lot of what drove us as a front office and as a franchise, really from top to bottom, everybody involved was winning championships. And he has to feel that because his legacy in his mind is all built on how many rings he can win, and he has to feel that you're committed to it. Now, what that doesn't mean is that he has to feel he has the best chance to win immediately either. When he came to Cleveland the second time, when he came back, we'd been a four-time consecutive lottery team. And he still came back because he believed his presence made them a title contender. And I think that's what could happen now when he makes this decision. I don't think you look at just teams where he can say, yeah, I can win a championship with that team. You look at teams where that guy can say, if I'm there, we can build a champion. And I think that's a different approach. And I think he understood that I got that I understood that, and that our front office understood how to deliver it.
Griff, we spent a lot of time, and I know a lot of the NBA folks spend a lot of time talking about LeBron versus Michael. I want to take this to the other side. If Golden State is to close this out, 3 out of 4 puts them clearly in dynasty status, and you know, you could argue that they almost won the fourth, and I know you were there for that victory for Cleveland. Where would this dynasty start to rank for you if Golden State does close this out and it's 3 out of 4?
Well, I could also argue that they shouldn't have won the first one, right? I mean, they
absolutely
beat Kyrie and
get them, Griff.
They beat us without Kyrie and Kevin. Now, I would not really argue that because I think what they are is a team that wins championships because they have the requisite attention to detail, and they're built in such a way that they are so incredibly talented, your margin for error is really, really small. And I think if you look back on the teams that have been that great, there aren't very many that had it consistently, and there certainly aren't very many that had it 4 years in a row. I think you look at the Bulls teams, certainly with Michael, were up there. I think you look at some of the Laker-Boston teams that were clearly the best in the league in their respective conferences and going to meet every year. They're in the very top echelon of the best teams that we've ever had. And I don't think you can ever pick one, just like I don't think you can ever pick one best player. And that's what's great about sports. People's guttural reaction and their emotional connection to that which they loved is always going to be there. So I'll never convince you that somebody's a better team than another great team, but I can probably convince you that they deserve to be in the conversation.
Fascinating. David Griffin joining Rick and John here. All right, Griff, let's talk draft a little bit. You blew my mind the other night talking to me about Mo Bamba of Texas. Obviously, I have been underrating this guy. Tell the peeps about Mo Bamba, and would he be a good fit here in Atlanta, Griff?
Well, first of all, I don't know that you have been underestimating him. I'm sorry, underrating him. I think maybe you just have underestimated him because you haven't seen what's been happening the last 2.5, 3 months since he left Texas. So he's working with Drew Hanlon, the same skills development coach that had Jason Tatum and Brad Beal, among others. And where he's come in that span offensively is truly freakish. And for him to be able to learn what he's learning mechanically that quickly, put it into action that quickly, he's something of a special player in his ability to learn, read, and react. And I think because of that, if you look at what his trend looks like, you have to say that he has a chance to be the best player in this draft class. And when you have the measurables he showed up with at the Chicago Combine, I think a 7'10 wingspan, that leaves an impression with teams. And because Giannis has been so special from a length perspective, because KD is such a freak because of length, I think people look at a guy like that and they think he could change things in the paint.
Griff, real quick, about 30 seconds. Luka Doncic, is he a guy you would take at number 3? What do you think he brings to the league?
You know, Luka's special, special good in terms of being prolific at a young age. To be EuroLeague MVP like he is staggering at that age. I don't think we've had an international player come here more accomplished at a younger age. That's never happened. He's a special passer. The player that I kind of liken him to in terms of pace. Now, when I say this, I don't mean the MVP candidate version, but the player he's like somewhat is James Harden in terms of the pace he plays at. And that also means that he's really not a defensive presence. So it matters for fit for Luka.
I understand, man. Griff, thank you so much. I will see you. I will see you tomorrow night for the Finals Film Room in Game 3. Have a great day, my friend.
Hey, thanks so much, man. You got to stop trying to get me off TV. I like this lifestyle, buddy.
Thanks, Griff.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.